Day Street Books and Harper Audio present The McCartney Legacy, Volume 1, 1969-73, by Alan Cozen and Adrian St. Clair. Read by Simon Vance. A note before we begin. For a bibliography, discography, and more, be sure to download the accompanying enhancement PDF from your audiobook provider, or go directly to www.harpercollins.com/pages/The McCartney Legacy. For Paula and Carolyn, who helped us sing our song. For Richard and Phyllis, Bob and Kim, who righted us when we were wrong. For George, who makes his dad amazed at the way he really needs you. I'm very good at forgetting who I am, because as far as I'm concerned, Paul McCartney is a name I was given at birth, and at the beginning of the Beatles, he split off into a celebrity, and I remained as me. I've got a very schizo thing with that. When he goes on stage, he's an entertainer. People who are very big on stage are quite shy in their private lives. That doesn't compute. They should be big in their private lives. But there's a cut-off. So, when you talk about Paul McCartney, I talk about the guy inside me. But you're talking about him, the guy who goes on stage and makes records and stuff. And I think it's just a way of preserving my sanity, really. Is thinking, I'm not really that. I'm just some little kid from Liverpool, really. I didn't do all that stuff. It's a dream, really. And it's going to stop soon. Introduction. Alan Cozen. There is something to be said for sitting in a room with Paul McCartney and watching him in action up close during an interview, an experience my years at the New York Times opened up for me on several occasions. And experience is the word. I probably conducted upward of 3,000 interviews during my 38 years at the Times, and though many interviewees are quite polished, no one comes close to McCartney in his ability to take control of the room. That's not to say that he hijacks your questions. If he finds those you ask engaging, he can be gratifyingly frank, although you have to be careful to avoid lines of inquiry that allow him to lapse into the many set pieces he has developed through decades of hearing the same questions over and over. But the most striking thing about interviewing McCartney is his uncanny ability to make you feel as though you're old pals, and that there is nothing he'd rather be doing than answering your questions. As a journalist, you know that this isn't, cannot be, true, but there is no denying that there is something seductive about having what feels like a friendly chat, with jokes, asides, bits of gossip and clarifications of long-standing mysteries, with someone whose work you've admired all your life. He also has a surprising memory for faces, given the huge number of people he encounters. In the fall of 1991, a year after my first one-on-one interview with him, he returned to New York for a press conference at Weill Recital Hall to announce that his first classical work, Paul McCartney's Liverpool Oratorio, would have its American premiere at Carnegie Hall. As I left the hall when the press conference ended, one of Carnegie Hall's publicists stopped me to say that Paul had spotted me in the audience and wanted to speak with me about the review I had written after hearing the Oratorio's world premiere in Liverpool. I had enjoyed the work. Its movements were, at heart, extended song forms, and if there's one thing McCartney handles better than most, it's the song form. I was ushered backstage, where Paul, with his wife Linda standing beside him, said, "I read your review of the Oratorio, and I just wanted to thank you for giving it a chance." He added that Linda's father, Lee Eastman, had read the review to him over the phone the morning after the performance, and had been pleased that the work got a positive notice in the Times. "And you know," he added, "he died soon after that. So you did a good thing." That is one side of Paul McCartney. The musician.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?